Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's Mentally Yours from Ellen and Yvette. A focus on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly mental health podcast. I'm Yvette, and today I'm chatting to three dads walking. They are Mike, Andy, and Tim. Each of them lost their daughter to suicide. They're now fundraising for Papyrus with a walk, and they're also raising awareness about their petition. We're going to be chatting about suicide and support.
Suicide's something that happens to other people. It's a very sad thing, and you're kind of aware of it, but it's out there, and you don't really think about it until it lands in your family. And when it does, your life and your world is shattered into 1,000,000,000 pieces. It's just horrible. For us, suicide arrived in December 2018, when Sophie, our 29-year-old daughter, took her own life. It was completely out of the blue. We knew she was struggling a bit. She was going through a bit of a family breakup, and she'd left a split from her husband. So it was a bit of a challenging time in her life, shall we say. But we weren't worried about her feeling suicidal. We were worried about her happiness. You know, that's all you want from your children, really. And so when she took her own life, it absolutely sideswiped us. Our life, well, we'd never be the same again. We'd also have this Sophie-shaped hole in our lives. But in amongst the loss and the awfulness of trying to get through Christmas that year and organising Sophie's funeral, along the way, we decided we had to create something positive out of our loss. We didn't know what. But in the organisation of Sophie's funeral, we came across Papyrus, Prevention of Young Suicide, a national charity aimed at supporting young people and the families who are really going through tough times. And it was through them we discovered that suicide is the biggest killer of under 35s in the UK, which was a complete shock. You know, why would we know about it? You're saying because suicide happens to other people. But what actually happened off the back of that, I got involved with fundraising for Papyrus, ended up doing a run early in 2019 using Sophie's entry, and turned it into a kind of a feel-good story, I suppose. I knew it was a good human interest story, so I used my contacts in the media to promote it, and it became very high profile in our part of the world. And I ended up raising just over £40,000 for the charity and became something of a poster boy for Papyrus. And so I was quite high profile within the charity, and I kept plugging away, doing lots of things through 2019, 2020. I was still running, skipping, and hula hooping at one point, which got a bit weird. But I kind of kept at it because I realised I could help raise money for Papyrus, but more importantly, I realised I could get people talking about suicide and suicide prevention. So I think that's kind of how I got started. But then Mike and Tib came along a little bit later on.
About 14 months after Sophie died, and obviously we didn't know Sophie, didn't know Andy and their family. And it was just at the start of lockdown. It was the week before the Prime Minister announced lockdown. And our 19-year-old daughter, Em, took her own life. She'd struggled throughout her life. She'd been diagnosed at 15 with autism. And that the diagnosis was a breakthrough for us because it made us understand a little bit more about how she needed to cope. And after she'd had that diagnosis, she kind of got some GCSEs, went to college, got a BTEC, did an apprenticeship, and was really kind of going in the right direction with life. But part of her, to cope with her autism, she loved going to the gym. To go to the gym, she needed a bit of money. So she used to work in our pub, and she'd worked in our pub for several years, part-time and then full-time. And then she also liked driving around the roads in Norfolk in a little bright red Mini. And the with lockdown coming, the gym closed, the pub closed, and then we started to cough in the family. And so we had to stay in, and it was the staying in that Emily just couldn't bear, and that was the thing that filled up her stress bucket. And she wanted to go out in her Mini up to the coast to take the dog for a walk. We didn't let her, so she went outside, and the next thing we know, Em's tried to take her own life. She died 5 days later in hospital after donating some organs. She was only 19. And it was just that she died the day before on Sunday the 22nd, and the Prime Minister announced on Monday the 23rd the full national lockdown. So not only did it affect, you know, Em, it then also massively impacted us as a family afterwards, with only six people at a funeral, totally on our own afterwards. We had support from friends and colleagues and staff in the village in Norfolk. But, you know, for Em's funeral, the street, the village was absolutely lined, and on the way to the crematorium, but the funeral service lasted for 25 minutes. There was no wake, there was nothing like that. And we were home by 10:30 in the morning with absolutely, didn't know which way was up, quite frankly. And we were absolutely, as Andy has already said, absolutely destroyed at that point. We didn't know where to go. And that's it really until met Mike. So Mike, over to you, chap.
Okay, well, we lost Beth about 6 days after Tim lost Emily. And I think what you can tell, as I tell Beth's story now, that each of our girls was very different. All beautiful lives, sadly lost, but very different. Beth was 17. She was life and soul of the party. She was a talented vocal artist. She was a dancer. She was born really to be on stage. She was a larger than life character. She had lots of friends and was constantly out doing things. She's the last person in the world that you'd ever think would take her own life. But sadly, it's, as we all keep saying, it's something that happens to other people. It didn't. It happened to us. As I say, the devastation's too small a word. We were, as Andy said, absolutely shattered. You're blown into bits. There is heartbroken's also too small a word. Your life is just changed, turned on its head. You know, we're a happy, vibrant family with lots of people coming round, great social life and everything. That's basically all gone now. I was plunged into a spiral of depression myself that resulted in me attempting to take my own life. And it was purely because of losing my little girl. Life isn't easy now, but I am in a different place. And with meeting Andy and Tim, who are, sometimes it's those people who are in the same place as you who understand. And this is a very important thing. It's that peer support. So, but it was only about 3 weeks or so after I lost Beth one of my daughters got a message via social media from a family in Norfolk who'd lost their daughter, and this was Emily, about 6 days before we'd lost Beth. And my daughter messaged back and forwards, but I ended up talking to Tim's daughter, Tim's eldest daughter, and I had a long conversation about, I didn't know, I was totally destroyed, but the act of reaching out is so strong. But I was talking to someone who was obviously not quite in the same place, but sort of understood the grief. And she started talking about her dad, that was Tim, and suggested that I might sort of talk to Tim. So basically we did. So we started talking together, and literally, you know, a good few times every single week we'd talk. We were totally different. I mean, Tim's hundred odd miles away in Norfolk, but we supported each other. And Tim's been very much instrumental in me still being here. He's one of the reasons I am. So, but as time went on, I started to hear about the charity Papyrus. I started doing courses there. I needed to know why Beth had done what she did. So I started doing courses, and one of the courses, one of the champions courses, I bumped into Andy's son, Gregor. Now, I'd heard of Andy. I knew Andy'd been bereaved. He'd lost Sophie a year or so earlier than myself and Tim been bereaved. And I know that Andy had been doing some awesome work with his Run for Sophie, his clips on YouTube and his fundraising and everything. And I started to form a bit of an idea that I discussed with Tim about suicide being a UK-wide problem. So I just put an idea together in my head. You know, maybe we could walk from where Andy lived in the Lakes through Manchester and out to Norfolk. So I met Andy and already discussed it with Tim, and took a ridiculous 2006 AA Road Atlas up there when I went for a walk with him, and Tim and Andy, being total map connoisseurs, laughed. And but they said, Andy said yes straight away, took it to Tim again, he said yes straight away, and then we started to roll from there. So I'll let one of the other guys take over from here.
And the thing that really struck me was Mike's idea of a way to show that this could happen to any family anywhere in the country. You know, we were three very different families, very, very different backgrounds. You know, there's no overlap in our networks or anything. You know, there's no way that we should have got to know each other. Yeah, but the thing was, once that idea of it was a thing that could happen to any family anywhere, just resonated with me, because it was one of the things. When you find that you've kind of landed in this world of suicide and suicide awareness or suicide prevention, once you start to look around, everybody's been impacted somewhere along the line. You know, one of the things we learned was that every suicide affects one of the things we learned was that suicide affects around about 135 people each suicide, and you think that there's over 6,000 suicides in the country every year, which means that, you know, that's close or over 800,000 people that are affected every year by suicide. So once you actually start talking about it, you find everybody you speak to has got some kind of experience, and that kind of encourages you to get off your backside and do something about it.
Just before we carry on, so how far have you walked and how much have you raised so far?
Yeah, so I'm just thinking, we've walked about, Andy will correct me, about 940-odd miles. There was a 324 on the first one and about 620-odd on the second walk. And at the moment, including a bit of gift aid, we're up to 1,050,000-ish with money still coming in. So over £1 million in total, which is miles more. When we set off last year, we expected to raise £3,000 each. So it's gone miles more than that. And the money absolutely shot up. It was BBC Breakfast when we got on there the first time. It went up from about £9,000 to about £50,000 when just Mike was on his own. And then as we left Andy's village, by the end of that first day on the 9th of October last year, it went from 50,000 to about 200,000 on the first day. So that just felt incredible to know that so many people kind of supported us, but also were obviously affected themselves and felt they needed to give to try and prevent young suicide. And the key thing is that all the money we raise, every kind of £5, supports a call to Hopeline UK, which is Papyrus's like life-saving number. So anyone that's feeling suicidal, or if you've got people that you love or know that are feeling suicidal, you can phone that number and try and get professional support. It's a line manned by professionals. So the money we've raised has really allowed Papyrus to advance its expansion plans, because it's only a small charity, and it's absolutely allowed them to kind of accelerate their expansion plans, which is brilliant, because that all the time is firstly saving young lives, but also just by the awareness raising. That's the whole point of us three getting together. Before we got together, none of us knew about Papyrus. None of us knew it was a thing. None of us knew about suicide prevention charities. And our big question is, if we'd known about suicide prevention charities, if we'd known about Papyrus, then maybe we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in. So it's a plea, really, for people to get to know about Papyrus and reach out if they need it.
I have quite a big question now. So a lot of people are quite scared to... A lot of people are quite scared to talk about suicide, or even to say the words, especially to people who are struggling. How can we get better at having conversations about the topic, especially with our families and friends?
It's the stigma attached to it, isn't it? It always has historically. You know, it was a crime once upon a time till, I think, 1961. Is that right, Andy?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, 1961, it was a crime. So people were, after attempt to take their own life, were actually locked up when really they actually needed help. And obviously it has a religious stigma as well. The thing is that suicide is our biggest killer in the UK of under 35s. And we lose up to 200 school children every year to suicide. We need to talk about it. We need to talk to the greatest danger to our young people. It needs to be introduced into the school's curriculum. That's something we'll come to a little later with our petition. But we need to encourage people to be open and honest so they know how to reach out, so they know they won't be literally condemned for talking about their own feelings. We need to encourage a help-seeking society, basically. So, you know, we always encourage people to talk. It's not always easy to talk with teenagers, is it? Often they clam up. But if you can keep open lines of communication, it is vitally important. So, yeah.
And I think there's some really, after we did the walk, or joined the first walk, so many parents came up to us on the walk. And then subsequently, when we've been talking at events, and they've said, by you guys being so open about it, it's allowed us to have a conversation with our children that we'd never have had before. So when those people were watching BBC Breakfast, having their cornflakes with their 10-year-olds, and us being so open and on breakfast telly just allowed those parents to say, and the children as well, to open up. And the children, you can talk in a very age-appropriate way. We're not suicide prevention professionals, but the charities out there have got age-appropriate material. And that's the key point. If we start, the youngest suicide we heard of was an 8-year-old, and we met several parents of 11-year-olds, that this came totally out of the blue to them. And every single one of those parents would say, we need to open up and get the kids talking so that they feel they can come forward and talk.
So the one thing that we do come across, or people do say, it is a really challenging subject. It's a really hard topic. It's a very scary topic. And there are fears that talking about suicide plants seeds, ideas. What we've discovered is there's been research done all over the world, actually, on this very thing. And the one thing that absolutely screams out is, talking about suicide doesn't cause suicide. Talking about suicide saves lives. Because the only way to actually engage with people and help people who are feeling suicidal is have an open and straight conversation. You know, beating around the bush does not help people. If you are worried about somebody that may be having suicidal thoughts, you've got to ask them, are you having suicidal thoughts? If the answer's no, ask them again. And if the answer's still no, that's great, but they might reach out for help in other ways. If the answer's yes, you can actually do something about it. The critical thing in this country, of course, is you can phone Papyrus and they can give you support and help, or the person who's suffering those thoughts can call and ask for help. But the help is out there. That's a critical thing. But you need to find out. You need to find out.
Tell us more about your petition.
Where do we start with that?
I think we can start with the fact that all of these parents that we met on the walk, all of them said they didn't know that suicide was the biggest killer of under 35s. No one knew that. No one knew that. And then we just started to think, and it was Gregor, who's Andy's son, said, well, we did PHOC at school. We didn't really learn anything much in there, but why aren't they telling us about, you know, the biggest killer of under 35s? And if you look at it on kind of a risk to our young people, we teach our young people about knives and drugs and sex education, terrorism at school. Put £40 million into the prevent strategy to educate our kids on, you know, radicalization at schools, yet we don't talk about suicide, the biggest killer of our kids. So we kind of got a bit righteous about it, and we need to do something about it. And we after that, we thought about a petition. Andy, I don't know if you want to pick up on the petition there.
Well, I think the first thing we did was, of course, we wrote to, off the back of the first walk, because we kind of developed this collective voice of all these suicide brief parents that we'd met along the way, we thought we've got to shout, you know, we've got to use this voice to shout. So we wrote to the government off the back of the first walk, and we got a letter back from the Department for Education, which was just rubbish. It just justified what they'd done so far on mental health, which is, to be fair, is has been several years in the waiting, but they've actually done quite a lot of work on mental health issues. But the one thing that screams out is suicide and suicide prevention is not a compulsory topic. Some schools do it, and some schools invite the charities like Papyrus in, but it's not compulsory. That was the critical point. We actually also had a meeting with Gillian Keegan, who was then Minister for Care, Social Care and Health, a junior minister. And she listened and said she would actually see what she could do to actually move things on with the Department for Education. So that was in February. But actually not a lot happened. And so when we were, that was at the heart of, I suppose, inspiring us to go for the second walk, which was to link together the Parliament buildings of the UK. So we're actually go and rattle the cages of the decision makers to make a decision. And we spoke about a petition when we were doing this plan, but actually we backed off it a bit, didn't we? Because Savid Javid, when he was at Health before he resigned, had spoke openly about his losing his brother to suicide and spoke very positively about a new 10-year strategy, suicide prevention strategy that the government were engaged with. So we were very hopeful that the government were pointing in the right direction. But in amongst the people who had offered his support, one was Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester. And we actually had a meeting with Andy. And one of the first things he said to us was, how are you doing with your petition? And we explained that we'd kind of put it on the back burner. But he said, no, you want to rethink that, because his experience of being in government where petitions were quite a useful tool, because what we have discovered is government is a slow moving, unwieldy machine. And to make change, you need to have a blooming long lever. And Andy was pointing out that a petition could be a useful long lever. So he kind of pointed us back in that direction. So we went back and had a rethink, and that became kind of the core message that we were sending out on the second walk.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you've got to remember, everything we learnt that led us to this, we learnt by talking to people on our walks. It was lived experience. Mm. And we just believe that we are not investing in our young people. We're not equipping our young people to deal with the pressures in life that include suicidal thoughts. So, you know, a whole program of it needs to be rethought. There's so much put on academic qualifications now, but we talk to people, they're realizing their kids are coming out of schools, going to universities, higher education, and they have lots of these academic qualifications, yet they don't have life skills around keeping themselves safe. And, you know, I'd implore anyone to look at their young people in their lives and really just think seriously for a minute. Do you think your young people are equipped to deal with the pressures in life now? And if the answer is no, I'll say you must sign our petition. We're now, I think we're about 150,500, I think, at the moment. Yeah, and it's growing. Yeah, and it's growing this weekend. And we are looking for meetings next year. We're looking for it to be discussed in Parliament. So watch this space, basically. But also, also we're waiting for meetings with the, hopefully, Gillian Keegan again, who's now the Minister of State for Education. We're looking for a meeting with, and we have been offered a meeting, no date yet, with Bridget Phillipson, the Shadow Secretary of State for Education. So if we can get these people on board, and it's got to be a cross-party thing, a cross-department, cross-party, everyone. This makes sense. It's absolutely logical. We need to invest in our young people. We need to be proactive about this and give them the life skills they need to keep themselves safe.
As well as the petition, there's Andy's MP, Dr. Neil Hudson, has raised an early day motion in the House of Commons, and that's getting cross-party support as well. So not only the public signed the petition, the MPs are already, you know, supporting Dr. Neil Hudson. And so there's kind of growing momentum there. You asked where you can sign the petition. Sorry, I cut you off. If it's simplest way, you just Google Three Dads Walking, and then there's three buttons on there. One's to sign the petition, one's if you need to seek help, and that will send you direct to the Papyrus page, and you can get all the expert suicide prevention help from there. And then the final one is if anyone wants to donate to our website. To us or to Papyrus through us, sorry, all the money goes to Papyrus. And I say every £5 saves or enables a life-saving call to Papyrus. So £5 could just save a life.
Okay, so our website was built for free, actually, by by a local organisation near us who actually had no capacity to do it in times of lockdown, because all their clients wanted, or everybody's website wanted rebuilding. But because so many of them had young families, they said, we've got to do it for you. So if you do have a look, it's threedadswalking.uk. So there's all kinds of information about us and our girls and why we're walking on there, and the buttons to donate and sign the petition.
Absolutely. We're very proud of our website as well. You know, I ask people to please just go on it. You can read about the girls, you can read about us, and obviously that there's the facility there for the petition and the donations. What I will say as well, sort of jumping back a bit though, this investment in young people is vital. You know, they're our future. That they will become adults and parents one day themselves, and if they have these life skills, it'll take so much pressure off the services as well, the police, the NHS and everything. Intervention has its place. Postvention absolutely has its place as well. But prevention is where it all starts. That starts at the beginning.
Right. I have two final but very large questions. So, first of all, what would you say to other parents who have been bereaved by suicide and are struggling at the moment?
Talk. That's how. Talk. We met some people who, I mean, it wasn't a parent. It was she'd lost a dad 70 years ago, and she hadn't spoken to anyone about it for 70 years, and that was bottled up. But we also met lots of other people on the walk who were still stuck in that massively early stage of grief, where they'd lost a loved, you know, a son or a daughter, 10, 15 years ago, and the pain in their face because they hadn't spoken to anyone about it. So reach out and talk is my best bit of advice, because it does help. Talking does help.
The weird thing about the walk, the first walk, was before we set off, we were kind of worried about each other, because we knew we would be intercepted by suicide bereaved parents. We were actually carrying a tracker so people could see where we were in real time, so we knew people would find us. And we were a bit concerned because we didn't know how we would react to hearing other people's stories. Obviously, we'd shared our stories and we knew each other inside out, really. What we did find on that very first day, we were joined by a suicide bereaved mum within 10 yards of walking out of the village hall car park in Moreland, and then another family a couple of hundred yards up the road. So we came across all these people who were sharing their stories, and as Tim was saying, sometimes it was the first time that I've ever spoken to anybody other than the family about it. And it was absolutely blatantly obvious that by speaking to us, it was lifting a weight off them. It wasn't healing them. It wasn't, you know, grief doesn't go away. You carry it all the time. But just by speaking about their loss and about their loved ones, you could see it was some kind of relief, and there was some of the pressure was taken off. And because it was so obvious that speaking made an immediate impact, it kind of encouraged us to keep going. And and our message to anybody who's been bereaved, not just by suicide, actually, but it's one of those things that people don't talk about. But if you don't talk about it, you end up carting this grief around in kind of an unchanged manner forever. But the way to actually change it or manage it or enable yourself to work around it is to talk about it.
And what would you say to anyone who is struggling in general at the moment?
Reach out.
There's help out there.
Yeah, yeah. Hope Line's there. You're a young person. I mean, Hope Line's directed for people sort of under 35, but that doesn't mean if you're reaching out, you're older, they won't help you. But as I say, Hope Line is manned by medical professionals or suicide experts who will work to keep you safe. They absolutely will. They have a text service and an email service as well if you didn't want to directly talk to someone, but you will get a listening ear on the other end. You know, I'd implore everyone as well, give yourself a second chance or as many second chances as it takes. Because if you give yourself a second chance, you'll give your family, friend and everyone else a second chance as well.
So this is goodbye. Mentally yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've been chatting about today, please give the Samaritans a ring on 116 123.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and subscribe to our channel, and perhaps even go back and listen to some old episodes. We have many of them.
Also, you can get in contact with us. We have a lovely Facebook group, which is called Mentally Yours, and we're also on Twitter at MentallyYRS.
See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.